Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hour number two of Darren, Donick, and Chase. Glad to be with you here today. More from SEC Media Days coming up. We're going to hear about something that Lane Kiffin said. We're going to get D-Mace's take on the whole NIL thing, but it's time for our Big Machine Music City Grand Prix driver interview, and it's brought to you by the Nashville Sheriff and Social Furniture, where we sell comfort. Shop local, shop social at 5412 Charlotte Avenue. We're pleased to be joined by Scott Dixon. The Big Machine Music City Grand Prix is coming up August 5th to the 7th this season, round 14 of the 17 race season. You can get your tickets by going to musiccitygp.com. Scott Dixon is an outstanding driver, been around a long time. In fact, we can go way, way back with him, but the old Nashville Super Speedway. Scott, thanks a lot for joining us today.
No, it's a real pleasure. Thanks for having me on, and looking forward to the upcoming event, man. It was a blast last year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, and hopefully it'll be even better. I want to ask you about that in a moment, but I mean, you, Scott, for those that do not know, is a six-time IndyCar Series champion. And Scott, going way, way back, we used to come out to the Nashville Super Speedway every year when the track was new and you guys were coming through there. So, I mean, you have done this circuit for a long time. So this is a pretty unique event, isn't it, when you get to go around downtown like it is?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Nashville Super Speedway was, you know, definitely have fond memories there. I think we won three or four times, got a few of those guitars. So Nashville's always been, you know, have had a sweet spot for that. And last year, the first time in downtown Nashville, I had actually forgotten how crazy and wild Nashville is as a city, man. It's a fun place. And, you know, I kind of saw that firsthand on the first night. I think it was Thursday night. We were doing a pit stop competition right there on Broadway. And, you know, just to see the crowd and everybody come out, it's definitely been a huge success. And I think it was over 100,000 people on race day last year. So, you know, big thanks to everybody at Big Machine and, you know, Scott Borchetta and Mark and everybody involved, because it's definitely these events that are huge for IndyCar. And as you said, I'm a veteran. You know, I've been in the sport for over 20 years you know, it's just really special to see some of these events and new and upcoming events and how they knock them, you know, right out of the park first go.
So what keeps driving you to win more? You just mentioned it. You're very decorated. You've done this for a long time. How do you stay? It's always fun to ask champions what keeps them hungry, even if you've done almost everything there is to do.
Probably getting beaten. You know, I think that's what, you know, keeps me hungry, man. You know, luckily we, or I should say with a lot of hard work, you know, we grabbed our 52nd win this weekend in Toronto and tied Mario Andretti for second on the all-time wins list, which was huge and a massive milestone for myself. So, you know, there are those glimpses, but, you know, we're in a sport where you lose a lot more than you win. And I think that's what really drives you on. But, you know, just the competition and the team atmosphere, you know, I've been at it's my 21st season with Chip Ganassi Racing, and, you know, having Chip, you know, steer this ship, and just his, you know, obsessiveness, I guess, with you know, filters down through everybody. And, you know, for me, you know, I feel very lucky to have this opportunity and just want to make the most of it. But there's nothing more triggering, I guess, and getting beat hard sometimes, and you know, I think that they're coming back and winning is what it's all about.
Now, like you said, Scott, you've been in the game for a long time, and it takes a special person, and it takes a lot of dedication in whatever you do to be in that specific sport or profession for a very long time. So kudos to you. You've been in it a long time. Maybe you stayed at the top for a very long time. If I'm not mistaken, now you're second all time. You tied Mario Andretti for IndyCar wins. So congratulations on that. But my question is, how do you, after so long, because race car isn't a traditional, like, physical sport, meaning you're running and doing all, you're getting hit and all this other stuff, like my sport was in football. So the conditioning is a lot different in football than I would take in IndyCar racing. So what is it that you do condition wise that you last so long in such a grueling sport?
Yeah, you know, it's a very good point. You know, and football is one of the most brutal sports I've ever seen. You know, it's tough, extremely tough on the body. Luckily, you know, I think with motor racing in general, you know, if you look at the 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, drivers were losing, you know, best friends every other weekend, mm-hmm. you know, just with the safety side of things. So I guess that's definitely a big part of it. You know, injuries are kind of less. You know, there is a big part on the drive, right? You know, mm-hmm. getting up and, you know, I still train 6 days a week, three of those days, 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon, you know, the others just two in the morning. The cars are very physical. You know, the IndyCar is kind of one of the last left purists with no power steering and, you know, very high loads. You know, you're getting up to 4 or 5 G in some of these corners. And your average heart rate for a 2 hour race can be, you know, 150 to 170 beats per minute. So, you know, the a lot of the drivers, I think, and even through my era, you know, kind of took a really big precedent on making sure that, you know, the physical side is not something that's going to alter your thinking and being exhausted and things like that. So, I know it's really helped me. In some ways, I think, you know, I've had injuries and mm-hmm. broken plenty of bones, but, you know, I don't know. You know, I think it's more of a mental game, I think, when it really comes to it, you know, and how long you can, obviously, if you have an injury that takes you out of it, that's something different. But, you know, to go this long, I think, for a lot of people, but I have seen motorsport in general and this sport, you know, the longevity is getting a lot longer, which is great to see.
We're talking to Scott Dixon, six-time champion. Right now he's in fifth place in the IndyCar Series, and there are seven races to go. They're in Iowa coming up this weekend, and, of course, they'll be in Nashville August 5th for the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix. One of the things, Scott, that I always enjoyed when you guys would come through at the Nashville Speedway is the camaraderie you guys had as drivers. You compete against one another so hard on the weekends, but it seems like there's just kind of a good fraternity back and forth. You kind of rib each other. We've often talked to one of the younger guys in Joseph Newgarden, who's burst on the scene here. You've been around a little bit longer than him, but he's got that kind of personality too. That's one thing that I didn't know anything about the sport until you guys started coming through Nashville, but that seems like it's a fun part, personalities and a competition that's respectful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think IndyCar is quite unique like that, you know, but we are a bit of a traveling circus, right? We spend a lot of time together and, you know, the motorhome lot, I think, is probably got a lot bigger even from, you know, when I first started and where you do hang out, you know, after the races or even, you know, the nights before Thursday kind of through Sunday. COVID kind of changed it a little bit and people kind of try to get in and out as quick as possible. But you're totally right. I think it's some of it sometimes too is just, you know, the danger factor too, right? Like, you know, you know that it's dangerous. You know, you are quite close to all of, you know, all of the people that are involved in the sport just because you know, how lucky one you are to be in it. But, you know, secondly, you know, and on the unfortunate side is that, you know, you occasionally do lose close friends. So I think that is a part of that, you know, which is, you know, not something that everybody talks about, but yeah, you know, I do love that part of IndyCar racing, that, you know, the competition is through the roof. You know, I've never seen it so tough in all of my career, but everybody also understands that, you know, you got to enjoy life, you got to have fun, and you know, don't get me wrong, there's some people that just plainly don't get on throughout the season, and you know, that's totally fine, and that's the competition side. But in general, man, it's a pretty tight family that we have here.
Well, Scott, we appreciate you spending a few minutes with us today. Good luck when you get to Nashville in August, and in the meantime, continued success on the circuit here. Good luck in Iowa this Saturday.
I can't wait, man, and thanks for having me on, and looking forward to getting back to Nashville.
Awesome. Scott Dixon, 20 consecutive seasons with at least one win on the IndyCar circuit. He's a five-time champion. He'll be coming to Nashville for the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix August 5th through the 7th. That is round 14 of the 17 race season. Remember, you can go to musiccitygp.com to get the tickets.
That is just, you know, just listening to him and knowing how long he has been, you know, in the circuit. It has to be grueling, you know, on your body from the standpoint of what he talked about, getting in and out of this vehicle. You know, you're driving for long periods of time in this compact car. And, you know, whether it's your back, your knee, your arms, it's not like I said, it's not like your traditional sport in football where you're getting beat up, you know, physically by another person. It's you're getting beat up by the car, you know, and you traveling and, you know, just consistently at a high rate of speed. So I can, I seriously take my hat off to those guys because, you know, the ones that have been doing it a long time and have sort of skirted having that huge accident that sort of puts them out or, like he said, takes a life, you know. So it's a lot of things that has to be going right with your team if you can surviving a game that long without having any, you know, major catastrophes goes on with your racing team.
No question about it. That interview brought to you by the Nashville Sheriff and Social Furniture, where they sell comfort. Shop local, shop social at 5412 Charlotte Avenue. When we come back, we'll get back into our SEC Media Day coverage. We're going to hear something that Lane Kiffin said yesterday. We're going to get D. Mace's take. It has to do with the NIL. Stay tuned. We've got more coming here on The Game. Yep, we got some Moby coming back at you here on 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick here with you along with Derek Mason, 12,000 receiving yards. 12,061, to be exact.
Yeah, give me my 61, man.
Yeah, I got to get you that 61.
That 61 means a lot.
You would correct me, right? You would correct me. If I just said 12,000, 12,061.
Yeah, 12,000. Give me my 61 yards, man.
Yeah, I'll earned every it. One of those.
Exactly.
Well, our SEC Media Day coverage continues from Atlanta. You got Caroline Fenton, Michelle Knezovic down there. They'll have the afternoon coverage for you. In the meantime, we're going to give you some of the things. We know NIL is going to be something that every single coach is asked about. And something caught D. Mace's attention yesterday on something that Lane Kiffin said. So let's play the clip, and then we're going to hit D. Mace up on what he thinks is next, what's best. How do we make it a win-win NIL for the athletes in school, the schools, and what's the best system that we can come up with? Because right now it is crazy. Here's Lane Kiffin.
Charles Odom with the Associated Press. You mentioned right off the top the importance of the transfer portal and filling some holes on your roster this year. I'm wondering, in the last year, what changes have you seen in your discussions with potential transfers of the NIL, and what do you think the coach's role should be in that whole discussion?
Well, what should the coach's role be in that discussion? I mean, I think ideally, if we're going to be in an NIL world and somehow you're going to do it right and it's going to get capped, you know, so that there's some way of controlling it and keeping playing fields close to the same. Otherwise, you're just going to have these glaring differences within Division I football based off of their, what I've said before, their salary cap. I know that's not really the right word. And ideally, I would think that the coach should be part of managing that. That's, you know, how you would want it done, but I don't know if it'll be that way or whatever. So that's just how I would do, and that's based off of look what happens in professional sports. There's salary caps, and the coach and the general manager / owner manage that.
Coach, we're going to go right in front of me.
The other thing about that, is if it's not, I would say, okay, well, why would you put it that way when coaches aren't supposed to be involved in that? Well, you got a whole other set of problems. If you got boosters out there deciding who they're going to pay to come play and the coach isn't involved in it, how's that work? I mean, they could just go pick who they want and pay them however much, and then are they going to tell you, the booster's going to tell you who to play to? And then when they don't play, how's that going to work out? So, again, this was not thought out at all, in my opinion, and has created a massive set of issues, which I think most, when people really thought about it, from a coach's standpoint, could have predicted this was going to happen.
That's Lane Kiffin at SEC Media Day yesterday. Very interesting perspective, D. Mace, because with his background in the NFL, he equated it to this. It's a salary cap. So why don't we just have a salary cap? Let's call it what it is. The players are going to get paid. And let's let the coach try to make sense of this and create order in their locker room rather than have the third party, the boosters, the collective people working on the outside and deciding what everybody gets paid when the coach is not supposed to be involved. Now, a lot of people will guffaw at that and say, well, hey, we know the coach is actually pulling the strings now, even though he's, quote, not supposed to right now. But what did you think of what he had to say?
I mean, I think he was right because we got to understand this. For the longest, the NCAA lied to us, or they tried to lie to us and say, oh, this is amateur sports. You know, they don't need to get paid. You know, everybody, you know, they're getting education. That's good enough. And, you know, whatever lie they sort of threw out there. And for a good while, you know, we bought into the lie. Yeah, you know what? They're right. You know, we are getting an education. We are, you know, at a prestigious college. We are getting all, you know, playing in front of, you know, some colleges playing at the time, playing in front of 80, 90,000, you know, people, being on television, having, you know, having these certain shoe deals that the teams have. You get to wear this and you get to wear Nike and all. So we sort of bought into that lie for about a about two decades, maybe three. But then we figured out this ain't right. You know, now it's become a business because the NCAA and these universities and these coaches are making extremely a lot of money. So you know what? We are the ones that are out there playing, whether it be men's basketball, men's football, you know, women's basketball, whatever the competitive sport is, we are the ones that are out there playing. We are the ones that are out there giving of our bodies, you know, not the coaches, not the president, you know, not the chancellor, not the, you know, the athletic director. It's us. So we need to be compensated for it. You know, the guys at UCLA tried it for a while, you know, the basketball players. It didn't go nowhere. And then finally, years later, you know, they won their case and sort of opened up the whole NIL thing slowly. Right. Now, Willie, they're lying to us and saying, oh, this is not a salary cap. This is not, you know, the NFL or the NBA or the MLB. The hell of it isn't. That is just what it is. It's
and it
salary.
Happened overnight. Well,
exactly.
Once that court case won and NIL happened, it was the floodgates open.
Absolutely. They did not. See, here's the mistake that all these smart grown-ups made was that it was almost they put the cart before the horse. Well, they did put the cart before the horse. You know, the judges said, listen, these men and women need to be paid. They didn't think first, okay, how do we structure this so there's no uneven playing ground, and then make it legal for these men and women to have NIL deals. No, they just said because for a long time, the players were on the back. They were putting the fire to their feet and saying, we need to get paid as athletes because this is no longer amateur sports because y'all are making too much money. All right, y'all right, so here you go. Instead of being adults and responsible and saying, okay, y'all are right, but we need to structure this first and then put it in play. They said, no, y'all are right. Let me just give y'all the money or tell y'all can have this without any structure. if you don't give your kids no structure and you just let them out the house, what happens, Willie? Or you don't give your kids any structure or any, you know, any rules and you go out of town, what happens to the house when you come back? It's chaos. That is exactly what's going on now. It is just chaos. And the horse is out of the barn now. How do you stop it?
That's the question. And I think that's what Lane Kiffin is trying to figure out, because I think he and every coach is sitting there going, okay, the world just changed, and what do we do? Everybody's got their own set of circumstances. It's very different in Oxford, Mississippi than it is Nashville, Tennessee, mm-hmm. or Charlotte, North Carolina, or Gainesville, Florida, right? Everybody's got their own, you know, surroundings that create challenges with NIL, and you're trying to compete on a level playing field. So what is the solution? And could you possibly have a, quote, salary cap? Let's just take the SEC to try to keep it simple. Could the SEC say, here is the amount of money you can raise to be used for NIL? Could that work? I mean, put whatever figure, I haven't done any kind of calculations, but let's just say $15 million. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it'd be that high. If that's low, maybe it's higher. But let's just say $15 million per team. That's max. And if you want to, if you only want to do seven, do seven. But you can't go past 15.
But the money doesn't.
You all decide. But you decide how to divvy it up among the players. Could that work?
But if you use seven, you don't get to roll over the next, you know, the rest of the money.
Right, right.
The next following year. Exactly.
Right. It doesn't carry over.
Well, Willie, they did it. They're doing it now, you know, with the television deals. You know, the Big Ten has their television deals. The SEC has theirs, which are two of the bigger deals out there. And what happens? Every school gets a certain amount of money. They don't say, well, you know, unless I'm wrong, they don't say, well, Alabama, you get more than Vandy because you've won seven championships and you have arguably the best coach in college football and some of the best players. So we're going to give you X amount of dollars more than Vanderbilt. They don't do that. Everybody gets a certain amount of money.
Well, it's like the NFL, right? It's if you didn't have a salary cap, the Cowboys or the Giants, you know, the big media markets would have an advantage over Nashville and Green Bay. And so, you know, the smaller markets, but they're smart enough to come up with a system where they have a level playing field where every team feels like they can have a chance to win if they're smart with their money. So is that what we want in the SEC? Is okay, we're going to pay the players, but let's try to create from the NIL's perspective a level playing field to where a coach could then take the money and divvy it out however he wants to amongst the players. If you want to give the quarterback, you know, five of the 15 million, or if you want to just say everybody gets, you know, 750 grand, you know, it's up to the coach, it's up to the program. But NIL, let's fix the number at 15 million. I'm just throwing out ideas here, but it sounds like Lane Kiffin would like that, because that would give him a better chance of competing with Nick Saban and Kirby Smart and maybe some other programs that have more access to funds than Ole Miss does. I'm just throwing that out there. Is that fair? Or you'd have some people saying, hey, it's a free country. Mm-hmm. There should be no limit.
Well, yes, in a sense, if you're talking, you know, the working class, like out in the real world, yes, you know, that applies. It does. It truly does. But I think in this situation, it doesn't apply. It really doesn't, because you're going to get this further divide of, we already had the divide of the haves and the have nots when you're talking to SEC, the Big Ten, you know, the Pac-12, the Big 12. The ACC, they were much larger than a lot of these other conferences. So everybody, where did everybody want to go? To these universities that were within these conferences. Well, you already had your divide. Now you're going to make it, it's almost like now you've truly pinpointed and you're going to make that divide even larger. Because now, and this is why Lane Kiffin brought it up, because he doesn't have the money, you know. His boosters probably don't have the money that Alabama, a Texas, a Texas A&M, a Georgia, Auburn have. So he's going to get left behind. Because why? There's no cap, and it's the wild, wild west.
All right, when we come back, I'd love to get some people involved in this if they want to call or text us. 615-737-1025. Call us. Give us what you thought. How do we try to create a good structure with the NIL? Or is it impossible? I just don't think this is going to be sustainable. No rules at all. So what should the rules be? Or guidelines, guide rails, whatever people like to talk about. We'll be back to discuss that in just a moment here on Darren, Donick, and Jason. Let me tell you about QC Kinetics in the meantime. QC Kinetics, of course, wants to keep people moving, stay active in their everyday lives. And if you've got some joint pain that's been hindering you over time, I mean, it can take away a lot of the fun of life, especially this time of the year where people love to get outside. So with that in mind, think about QC Kinetics and the regenerative technologies that they have. Regenerative medicine can really help you do the things that you want to do. It's new. It's exciting. It's not the old pain meds, the steroid shots, even having to go under the knife in some circumstances. We're talking about dealing and addressing any pain in any joint naturally with their natural biologics of QC Kinetics. No drugs, no downtime, no surgery. If that sounds exciting to you, find out about these new cutting-edge ways with the local medical professionals at QC Kinetics. 615-249-4024. That's 615-249-4024. 615-249-4024. Get the free consultation from QC Kinetics. Here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Coming up at high noon, we've got Tim Hasselbeck. We'll talk some NFL football. A lot of SEC media coverage today. And, of course, it is brought to you by our friends at Volunteer Hose and Gasket. School coming back. The goal, we'll have all kinds of coverage coming up for you. Brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Later in the show, we'll talk a lot about what Nick Saban had to say this morning. But one of the things that Greg Sankey said, the commissioner yesterday, about the NIL, is he said, look, we need some structure. We need some clarity. We've got to have collaboration, deep thinking. So everybody's saying this, right, with a number of subjects, but definitely with the NIL. We need structure. So what's the structure? Somebody proposed something, and let's figure it out. And I'd love to hear some people on our phone line or text line brought to you by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 737-1025. Put your name on the text. You know, we've got a couple already up there. So I threw out there, Lane Kiffin threw out there, a salary cap. So would that work? We don't know if that's going to work. So some people are saying no chance on the salary cap. A player will challenge it. Conferences, states would be competing to have an advantage. And, of course, those that are the haves are probably not all that excited to level the playing field, right? It's just like with the Yankees when there was absolutely no salary structure at all. Or let's just take hockey before the days of the salary caps. Some Predator fans can remember this when the Predators had about a $15 million payroll and they played the Red Wings in the playoffs who had about a $71 million payroll. That's going to happen. There's going to be a lot of separation in college football, so the ones that have the resources are not really going to be excited to have any kind of salary cap.
Well, I think that's, that's one of, many reasons why these teams are, it's almost like they're forming these super conferences. One has to be in part because of the NIL. If you want to pick – if you're in the Big 12 and Texas, you're in the Big 12 and you're competing with Alabama and you're recruiting a kid from, the SEC sort of footprint. And you know that they want to be in the SEC. Now, because you're coming in the SEC, now you can compete with getting that kid on the NIL in an NIL situation. Whereas before, I think if you're in another conference and everybody wants to either play in the Big Ten or the SEC, regardless, and I believe regardless of how much money, because I still believe there's only so much an individual will pay you, these college kids. Now, we've heard, you know, guys speculating that guys have gotten upwards of $8 million in NIL deals. Well, you know, would this guy have gotten that $8 million had he said, you know what, I'm going to play in this other conference over here as opposed to the SEC? Would that person have given him an sort of an $8 million NIL deal? Probably not. So I think, you know, one of the reasons why these conferences start, these teams are start to sort of merge into these super conferences is because of the, in part because of, you know, NIL and how it has opened up the landscape and how, you know, individuals want to play in these bigger conferences. But if you don't get a hold on it, again, I'm going to say it, and I said it last segment, it's going to be a bigger divide in the haves and the haves not have nots. I know you probably don't see it right now, because you still got individuals going to these certain colleges, the colleges they have all been going to since, you know, I guess the early 2000s, whether it's Alabama, Auburn, you know, Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State. It's like a handful of teams that everyone's trying to go to. Now it's going to be even worse because the teams that they're going to now, they can pay them. Ole Miss can't pay them. Mississippi State can't pay them.
Vanderbilt can't pay them as much. They're working
exactly.
On it. But they don't. They can't compete. It's not going to be a level playing field.
Exactly. It's not going to be a. And if you thought it was bad prior to this, I think it's going to get even worse moving forward. You may not, again, you may not see it now because it all just sort of happened within the last two or three years. But I guarantee you, if they don't get some type of structure, and I don't know what the structure is, I don't know what can you put in place, because again, they put the cart before the horse. Instead of, because they knew all of this was coming, they knew it was eventually coming. So in that case, and I've always said, the NFL for a very long time was reactive instead of proactive. Well, the NCAA has been, in this situation, they have been reactive instead of proactive. They Big knew time. It was coming, but did nothing about it. And now they're trying to say, oh, we got to do something. There's going to be this disparity, you know, between one team and another, you know, because they can pay more and they can't. Well, y'all should have thought about that before this old NIL thing just sort of happened.
Yes, absolutely. If you want to weigh in, I'd love to hear some proposals on how we make NIL the best it can be here. Or you can weigh in and just say, I like the Wild Wild West. It's a free country. It's a free market. Just let it fly. I don't know if that's the best way. Certainly Lane Kiffin, who is definitely a renegade, right? He's a cutting edge guy. He's the guy that likes to push the envelope. And he's the one saying, hey, man, this isn't right. We've got to figure something out here. Here's Ray in Clarksville. Texts in on our text line brought to you by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. That's way too much. I threw out $15 million for a salary cap. That's way too much money. It needs to be less, and all colleges should have the same maximum salary to avoid drawing too many players to one particular conference or team. So Ray is for a salary cap. So let's hear a little bit more from Lane Kiffin on how he basically says, look, let's call it what it is. We're now moving into an era where college football has become sort of a semi-pro or full-on pro sport.
1 year into NIL, what have you found works with NIL? What doesn't work? And, you know, you say college football is all about money right now. So how have you managed that in your program? You know, you mentioned maybe there needs to be general managers, but have you kind of delegated that responsibility to someone already? Or how have you gone about dealing with that?
Well, the first question is the keys to NIL and how do you do well at that? You have really good boosters. That's how you do well at it. So I'll say what other people don't say, as you know. So it's like a payroll, you know, in baseball. What teams win over a long period of time? teams that have high payrolls and can pay players a lot. So we're in a situation not any different than that, which is what I'm not saying I didn't. I'm sure other people said it. I said it day one. You legalize cheating, and so get ready for the people that have the most money to get the best players. And now you have it. So it is what it is. And as far as a general manager to manage that, we aren't allowed in the current system to manage what they make. So so there isn't, well, we're not there yet. And I don't know that we ever will be. That's just what I said it should be, because that's what any other, you know, professional sports, which is what we are now, does.
That's Lane Kiffin. A little bit more on his thoughts for NIL. Very refreshing to hear a coach just kind of call it like he's seeing it, that, hey, we have gone into professionalism here. Highest amount of money, most boosters equals highest payroll. He used the term payroll, and best players as a result. When we come back, we'll delve more into this. We want your thoughts, 737-1025, phone or text. We'll also, in the next segment, give you a chance to win some WWE SummerSlam tickets coming up. So stay tuned. That's on the other side. Then Tim Hasselbeck at noon. Stay tuned. We're coming back here on Darren Donick and Chase. Got a lot of texts on our text line presented by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. As we promised earlier, as we get back to Darren Donick and Chase here, we're going to get to the question, should there be a salary cap with NIL? Lane Kiffin is proposing that. He says, let's call it what it is. It's a payroll. So let's try to level the playing field. Otherwise, the teams that have the most money are going to have the biggest payrolls and the best players. Who's kidding who? First, caller number 7. If you want to go to the WWE SummerSlam, call right now. Our man Nick is ready to roll. Caller number 7, 615-737 1025, SummerSlam, WWE, caller number 7. Okay, D-Mace, got some people that have texted and weighed in on what you're talking about here. Maybe they should have a maximum amount of NIL. This is from Gary. Maximum amount of NIL deals to hand out. And each of those are a certain tier with a certain maximum monetary value associated with it. So I'm not sure how many tiers that is. But that's even more structure. And so, again, people want structure. So what would you think of that? Let's say, D-Mace, you and I are coaching, and we come up with a system. We got three tiers. Everybody on the team is at least the first tier. I want everybody feeling like they're getting something for being a part of our team. Then I've got level two, and then maybe level three are my stars. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it could work. The whole tiered system, because everybody gets a part of the pie. Everybody gets a piece of the pie. Everybody feels that, because what do coaches always preach in college? If you are, whether you are the, you know, in college is almost 100 kids on a team. Let's just say 90. If you are the 90th person on a roster, or you're the first person on the roster, we all have a responsibility to make this team better. We all need to do something to make the team better. That's what they preach, right? They preach that across the board. Absolutely.
But so, you would have infighting, though. You would say, you know, you might have John over here saying, hey, why am I tier one? I'm better than this guy over here sitting four lockers down. Here's tier two. He's getting this money, and I'm only getting this. Come on.
But I get that part too. My thing is whether it be a tier or there's just be a structure in place to pay everybody. Now, because Lane said what every head coach in college football is thinking, but maybe, you know,
they're not willing
a percentage, 1% will say it, or 0.1 or 0.001% will say it. This is professional sports. That's what it is. Okay, if it's professional sports, well, let's treat it like professional sports from an income standpoint. We know that in professional sports, everybody doesn't get paid the same, right? But everybody gets paid, right? You hear it? Everybody gets paid, but no one gets paid the same. Everybody gets paid different. The starting quarterback who's a MVP or who's a all-star, he's going to get paid more than the third string quarterback who is on the roster, right?
Right. The first string. So now the coach has to become a capologist or a GM. Right?
But I wouldn't even leave
on
it
on top of everything else he's doing.
I wouldn't even leave it up to the coaches. Again, because when you leave it up to the coaches, there's going to always.
So who does it then? If it's not the coaches,
I say not the coaches, because I just feel that the waters will get murky, very quickly, because coaches have their favorites. We all know that. And a coach can punish a guy and say, well, you know, you're not getting this. He may not verbally say it to him, but he may be in a coach's doghouse. And I've seen coaches run players out of organizations, both in a college level and in the pro levels, okay? So that coach cannot like that player and say, you know what, I'm just going to pay that player this much. I'm not going to tell him why I'm paying him that much, but I'm just going to slide it out that he makes X amount of dollars. I think it should be someone within the university, you know, someone particular, you know, someone that runs the finance department or oversee a finance class that understand finances and how you divvy out money. I think that person should be, you know, head of NIL across the board, not just football, but across the board at the university. That one person or that group of people should be in charge of it, because they have a better understanding on how the numbers work. The coach is too busy coaching.
That's really interesting. Okay, that's an interesting take. So does he answer to the coach, or does the coach answer to him?
No, he doesn't answer the coach. They don't answer to the coaches. The coaches don't go in and grill them. Whatever system they use.
But you're saying this person works for the university.
They work for the university.
He's not announcing. Because right now that person or those people sort of exist, but they're technically not part of the university and technically not working with the coach. They're doing their own thing.
Well, to make it even I see what you're saying. So to make it even better, this person has nothing to do with the university. All this person see is numbers.
Okay.
And how do we slide out the numbers?
That's sort of what it's developing now with these collectives, right?
Exactly.
You have somebody running the collective, but most people think they're back channeling with the coaches here. So let's get to a couple more texts and develop a few more ideas here. Then we'll get to Tim. We'll ask Tim Hasselbeck about this because he does a lot of college football games. Unnamed texter says salary cap won't work. You'll just go back to under the table money beyond the cap, right? Underneath the table. So now you'd have people getting paid, but also people illegally getting paid. If you have a cap, you just go around the cap with the old school ways. That's no question that would happen, right? It's natural. And then the question would be, who's policing it? And right now, nobody's policing anything. So how would you police beyond a salary cap? That's a fair question. Jason from Mount Juliet texts, financial aid for school. If you make more than a certain amount, then you're not eligible for a scholarship.
I thought about that, too. Like, you know, if you're one of those guys that's making that top tier amount, yes, you get the scholarship. Meaning, yes, you are on our roster, per se, but you don't get the scholarship money. The scholarship money goes to someone else. Maybe the scholarship money goes to that 90th person on the roster.
Or how about this? What if you're making so much money, maybe those scholarships could be passed on to other sports who
Absolutely.
Are going to need to find a way to make things happen here. Maybe you could have more scholarships for soccer players, baseball players, tennis players, etc. Because right now the system is being funded, all the money they're not paying to football players, that is helping universities fund the scholarships that they do have some of the other teams.
But
so what happens to all those sports down the road?
But then as we're talking about this, and I'm thinking like, okay, yeah, that's good, that's really good, but then here is the can of worms that you're opening. These kids don't want you to know how much they're making, and the boosters don't want you to know how much they're giving. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Everything is like, nobody knows. They speculate.
But if it's a salary cap, you should
have
to
know.
Clean.
Exactly. You should have to. And I don't think they want people to know how much money they're getting or how much money is being given to them and who is giving it to them.
Michael in Clarksville texts, I don't like it. Don't put a cap on how much a player can make. Schools have no problem making millions off of players. Okay, sort of an old school thing that we've been hearing for years. And then finally, Randy, didn't this start with the athlete just needing money to take his girlfriend to a movie, be able to go to McDonald's? I was thinking about $500 a kid per month when I first started hearing about it last summer. Mm-hmm. From that kind of money for a date to some athletes making more than some NFL athletes, what happens if they make it to the NFL and have to take a pay cut? People used to joke about that all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, you had to take a pay cut coming from Kentucky basketball, right? Ha ha. You know, but that actually might be true. Like let's just take A.J. McCarron. Mm-hmm. A.J. McCarron, great college quarterback, national championships for Alabama. Not a great NFL quarterback, but he was on a roster, mm-hmm. right? In theory, if Bryce Young is making $3 million or is worth $3 million or whatever he is for NIL with Bama, and he becomes a backup quarterback in the league, he literally will be taking a pay cut.
Yeah. In a sense.
Right?
No, you're right. In a sense, he's taking a pay cut because he's going to the NFL only making X amount of dollars where he's making, you know, three or four at the collegiate level. So
it's crazy. We are in a new world for sure. Thank you to Lane Kiffin for his honesty. And I think he's spelling it out for a lot of people that hadn't already had it. So with that in mind, we'll touch base with Tim Hasselbeck, another quarterback. We'll find out what he could have made back in the day for NIL. Maybe D-Maze can figure out, what do you think he would have been worth for NIL back in the day? Stay tuned. We'll get to our noon guests in a moment. This is Darren Donick and Chase.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save